Green, WGN political analyst and chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Today at the City Club, we had a rather unique presentation entitled Chicago Gourmet, Food is Art, Use Your Palate. We had several people in the food industry led by Rick Bayless from Frontera Grill and of many other restaurants. And basically, they're pushing the Chicago Gourmet weekend, the weekend after next, where you'll have, for a fee, a chance to eat gourmet food, drink fine wines, and mingle and schmooze with the top chefs of the city. They argue that food is art. They are very proud of the fact that the restaurant and hospitality industry is a giant business for Chicago. It creates many jobs and brings in a tremendous amount of money. And they are hopeful that this Chicago Gourmet thing will become a city institution.
Thank you, Paul. And thank you, Jay. And thank you, Skinny. Let's hear it for you three of these guys. Come on. Come on. More. Come on. They do this every 2-3 times a week. One of our missions at the IRA is to celebrate and cultivate the culinary talent we have here in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. We're proud to highlight the renowned chefs and restaurant at Chicago Gourmet. This year alone, we have 240 chefs and 150 restaurants participating. Chicago Gourmet is owned and produced by the IRA. Our title sponsor is Bon Appetit Magazine, and our presenting sponsor is Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits. So, every year we sell out. We could rest on our laurels, but we don't. We try to figure, how do we make Chicago Gourmet better? We know it's the best food and wine show in the city, in the country. They say it's South Beach or Pebble Beach. No, it's right here in Millennium Park every September. So let's hear it. That's right. We got the best food and wine show. So we come up with new features every year. And this year, for the first time ever, we have a host chef, the one and only Rick Bayless. And our new theme this year is Food is Art. Use your palate. Today, we'll talk about the best food and wine show in the country, and we'll also talk about the dynamic culinary scene right here in the city of Chicago. There is no other scene that's better. We are the culinary capital of the United States. I don't care what they say in San Francisco, New York, or New Orleans. It's right here in Chicago. We have celebrity chefs, iconic restaurants, neighborhood restaurants, food trucks, you name it, we got it. We got food from every cuisine, from every culture in our 77 communities throughout Chicago. We have 22 Michelin star restaurants here in the city of Chicago this year, and over 50 James Beard Award winners. And we have the National Restaurant Association show here every year. It is the best food service restaurant show, not just in the country, in the world. Over 70,000 people come in to see this show. And now we have the James Beard Awards here, the Oscars of the culinary industry. Yes, and David Whitaker, the new president and CEO of Chew Chicago, likes that we have it here, right, David? And Mark Gordon from the Illinois Hotel Lodging Association, and Patrick Donnelly. Patrick, look up. Are you looking at your phone over there? Look up here. From the Hyatt, they're very happy because that puts guests in beds and diners in seats. So they like when we have that show here. And culinary tourism is huge to the city of Chicago. When the majority of the people travel now, they look at what restaurants are in that city. Back half of the plains, all about tourism. Mayor Emanuel set a goal of 55 million visitors by 2020. And culinary tourism plays a big, big part in that. So there's only two other cities that get 50 million or more visitors. Orlando, I don't think they have a culinary scene there, and New York. Chicago has the most dynamic chefs, restaurateurs, and sommeliers in the country. And we have three of them with us here today. Chicago Gourmet would not be where it is today without Rick Bayless. He was our first chef to sign up over 9 years ago. And he's got some exciting things in store for us this year. And I'm not sure where he finds the time between opening new restaurants, writing cookbooks, doing TV shows, and winning six James Beard Awards. Let's hear it for Rick. Kevin Bain is the co-owner of the Boca Restaurant Group. He has some of the hottest restaurants in town, from Lincoln Park to Old Town to the West Loop. Restaurants like Girl and the Goat, Duck Duck Goat, Momotaro, GT Oyster, and he's opening a new restaurant tonight. Yes, and he's here, GT Prime. Yep. Boca is all over Chicago Gourmet. Stephanie Iser is doing a demo on the main stage. Chef Pandel Swift and Son is at Hamburger Hop. So it's just amazing. Thank you for everything you do. But let me also tell you about Kevin and his partner, Rob Katz. They've opened 19, today will be 20, successful restaurants. So they know a thing or two about opening and running restaurants. Thank you, Kevin. And we also have Seraphine Alvarado here, who is the director of wine and education at Southern Glazer Wine and Spirits. He puts together our entire wines for the Grand Cru, which are elite wines from around the world. And Seraphine cut his teeth along Chef Charlie Trotter, so he knows perfection. And he's one of 105 master sommeliers here in North America. We can't wait to see what Seraphine puts together for Chicago Gourmet this year. So thank you. We appreciate you being here from the Illinois Restaurant Association, Chicago Gourmet. Let's just dive in right now. So Rick, Seraphine, and Kevin, if you could come on up here. So I thought we'd start out first by starting to have each one of you just give us a quick background, snapshot of your history in the hospitality industry. And Rick, we're starting with you.
Okay. I grew up in a barbecue restaurant in Oklahoma City, and I'm fourth generation in the restaurant business. Fell in love with Mexico, moved there, lived there for 5 years, married someone from Chicago and decided that Chicago was my new hometown, and moved here about 35 years ago. Frontera, which if you don't know where Frontera is, it's just on Clark Street, one block south of here.
Now I doubt taking that
there's probably anyone
Frontier
here that
might
know that. But we opened 30 years. It will be 30 years ago in a couple of months. And it was the best choice of my life because Chicago is really my hometown. I've never felt so at home anywhere else, and Chicago has, since we opened up, just opened their arms to us after we opened 30 years ago Frontera. 2.5 years later, we opened the sister restaurant next door, Topolobampo. Since then, it has been sort of like lots of different little things that we have done, including opening Leña Brava over on West Randolph Street just a few months ago with a brewery next door called Cruz Blanca. But there's a lot, I've skipped over a whole lot of things because if I keep going, then these guys won't have any time to say anything. So I just sort of like went from the beginning to the end really fast.
Kevin?
I knew I wanted to be a restaurateur when I was 10 years old. I grew up in Springfield, Illinois, and I told my mom and dad I wanted to open up my own restaurant.
Tell them that first restaurant that was in Springfield. You got a lot of people that go to Springfield.
I opened a restaurant in 1997 called Indigo in Springfield, Illinois. I owned it for about a year, and then I sold it. But the way I started was I went to University of Illinois for a couple of years because I didn't know anybody in the restaurant business. And I woke up one morning and said, I'm taking off, and I'm going to try to open up my own restaurant. And my silly little plan was I was going to work double shifts 6 days a week, sleep on Sundays, live off of one job, save everything I made off the other job, and eventually, which I thought would be 10 years, I would have my own restaurant. I saved up $50,000 in 3 years, and I opened up a little tiny six-table restaurant in Seaside, Florida in 1993, so 23 years ago. That restaurant gave birth to another restaurant down there. Then I sold them both. Went to Springfield, opened up Indigo. Went to Nashville, opened up a restaurant called 6 Degrees. But the goal was always Chicago. And I kept coming up to Chicago in between and going to restaurants like Rick's and Gordon and Charlie Trotter's. And every time I came up, I was pretty daunted. And said, well, I don't know enough to come to Chicago yet. And then one day I decided that I knew enough. I moved here in late 2001. I met Rob Katz. We had a cup of coffee at Nookie's on Wells that was supposed to be a 15-minute cup of coffee, and we sat there for 4 hours. Rob had been in the bar business, had four bars. We thought a lot alike, and we said, what's the worst that could happen? Let's open up one restaurant together. And that was, for him and I, 16 restaurants ago together. And we opened, and GT Prime at 707 Wells does open tonight. When I booked this 6 weeks ago, it sounded like a good date. And of course, it was not a perfect date. But listen, I love being in Chicago. I think it's the best restaurant city in America. I truly believe that. I truly believe that we do hospitality and design and food better than everybody else. The alchemy of those three things. And I wouldn't want to be any other place.
Serafin?
So for me, it was a combination of coincidence. I think the field chose me. I didn't really come out, set myself. I wasn't a 10-year-old focus that this is what I wanted to do. Music was my passion. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Wanted to be a musician. My parents kind of were not too encouraging about that. And so I went to college, and I enrolled in chemistry and was interested in being pre-med, but really had no interest in terms of science in that realm. And started working part-time, was looking for a part-time job. And there was this mall opening. It was a Nine West shoe store. And got the job and working in the warehouse. And the day before I was supposed to show up to work, they told me that they had to reduce the staff that was opening. And so I was out. So you're out. And so there was a hotel opening. It was a Hilton Hotel. And that's how I got into the hospitality industry. And I didn't know nothing about it. I remember being in this big ballroom, and people, they're calling, all right, engineers, who's here for engineering? Raise your hand. Engineers, I don't have that technical skill for that, so probably that's not, I should not apply for that. And then they asked for the chefs. Well, I don't know nothing about cooking, so not for that. Bartenders, not for that. So at the end of the day, the person said, so I suppose everybody else here is for servers, the ones left. So I left with the servers. And that was it. So I put, all right, I'm a server. And so they interviewed me, and I didn't know anything, so they put me as a room service waiter. And that was it, just rolling the cart into the side of the room, minimal damage. But I had a passionate manager, Melody French was her name, from Baltimore. And in the time off that we had in between orders, she would talk to me about wine. And she gave me this book, Kevin Schraley's. I don't know if anybody has read that book, Windows of the World. I memorized that book inside out. And I said, this is what I want to be. That was it. That was the moment I realized this is what I want to do with my life. And I remember in those days, I wanted to pursue it, the best I can be. And that then came the master sommelier kind of approach. And I started with a master program and failed miserably. And somebody said, you have to come to the United States, work in a city where there's other people also pursuing it, and have access to mentors, other masters. And Charlie Trotters was the most visible chef back in Puerto Rico. In terms of his books and his shows and all that, and his dedication beyond just food. Wine was something imperative and very important part of the mix, and having other master sommeliers have worked for him, like Larry Stone, Joe Spellman, I said, this is what I want to do. So I sent Charlie an email, and just out of the blue, I want to work with you. And nothing back. Next day, I want to work Charlie Trotters and whatever it is. I have no experience, nothing. And probably around 60, 80 emails later, he responded. And he said, well, you know what? This is if you're really interested in working here, I need you to be here on Friday. And it was Wednesday. And it was the middle of winter. So I have no coat, not prepared. I'm in Puerto Rico. So I had to prepare myself, knock the door, and here I was, 2 o'clock. And Charlie opened the door, and here I am. Probably he was not expecting me to show up. And I was there, and so I observed, and that was it. And it was a fascinating journey from that point on. Charlie was very influential in terms of myself as a professional and where I'm at today. And I learned a lot from beyond the technical aspect of our business. It's more the mentality, the mindset, that excellence mentality approach that I still try to carry that on and pass it along to everybody I encounter. So it was a cool ride. Yeah.
Thank you, Serafin.
Thank you.
Now I'd like to start a discussion about Chicago Gourmet. 2016, as I said earlier, marks our ninth year. So we're going to give a little video up here, show what last year looked like. If we could start that real quick, please.
Nice.
As I said earlier, it gets better and better each year. So our panelists have been greatly supportive and involved in Chicago Gourmet over the years. What has your participation looked like, and what are your feelings about the event? Serafin, we ended with you. We're going to start with you on this
right.
one.
So like Sam mentioned earlier, my role is it's all wine-related, particularly from the Grand Cru perspective, which where we present the best of the best in relation to wines. It's an amazing experience for those who haven't been there. It's a two-hour event within the event itself. The other piece that is very critical is the seminars. And I always think that that's the, from the wine perspective, one of the best kept secrets of the event, because you don't have to pay extra ticket for that. It's part of your general admission. And you have access to these great seminars that are being put together and great speakers. So I have to bring in speakers for it, discuss the topics and themes that we think would work well, and select the wines. So we bring, people, master sommeliers of national, international caliber, like Larry Stone, Fred Dame, Joe Spellman, local, Alpana Singh, local. And we just put together an amazing, amazing show from a seminar perspective. And that in itself is it's a lot of work. But the seminars themselves are spectacular. I have my seminar has to do with music. And I always try to bring a different element in terms of what we do and intentionally to go along with the theme of this year in terms of the art theme itself, and having myself a musical background, I'm going to do a wine and music pairing. And it's, we've done it in the past. It's fascinating in terms of the correlations and the sensibilities that wine brings out that also coincides with what music obviously brings out, and being in the mood and setting the mood and setting the context in itself is amazing what comes out of it. I've done it live, performing live at City Winery, this is the first time we're going to do it at Chicago Gourmet itself. So we're going to think about what goes well with country music, what goes well with rock and roll, what goes well with hip-hop, what goes well with classical music, what goes well with, and on and on and on. So that's kind of the approach and mentality of where we're going. So we'll cover the whole gamut in that sense. So it's going to be really fun.
Thank you, Serafin. Kevin?
First of all, I see that both Rick and Serafin made the video, but somehow I didn't make the cut. So,
because I think you were at the Cub game that day when we were doing the video.
I think we need to re-edit the video, but whatever. It's funny. I remember 9 years ago going to Food & Wine in Aspen and thinking to myself, wow, Chicago really needs to have a signature event like this. Supposedly they did 9 years ago, but I think it was Rick Bayless, a couple of kegs, and a mixtape.
That's what it was.
And now it's grown into this, which is amazing. You know, we participated on a lot of different levels. Like Serafin said, the panels are really amazing. I've done them a couple of times. Both Stephanie and Chris Pandel are doing it this year. When your city's doing a signature event like this, and this is the biggest event, and Rick will tell you, we get invited to do about 800 events a year, and there's only so many you can do. This is one that you mark the calendar and say, if you get an invitation to the dance, you dance. So.
Thank you. Rick?
It was a really good mixtape, though. It was. You know, look at what it launched. I mean, come on, people.
So my role this year is slightly different. I have curated a bunch of the events as sort of the sponsoring chef of this whole enterprise this year. And we're going to start off, we always start off with the mayor there and a lovely address and thanking all of our sponsors. I will be part of that. And then it rolls right into a demo that I did. Last year, I did my demo with a very interesting sous chef. That was Mayor Emanuel. And if any of you happen to see it, it was really hilarious. I didn't know when I started poking fun at him and his culinary skills if he was going to react in a positive way or not. So I really went out on a limb, but it turned into a really funny back and forth. And then he started commenting on my culinary prowess as well. And we had a great thing. We're going to take it on the road this next year. We will do that. And then in the afternoon, this whole idea of food and art that Serafin was talking about, where he's going to do a seminar that talks about what wine goes with what kind of music. It sounds like a strange stretch, but in the United States, especially in the United States, we have made this like division that food needs to just be sustenance, but it is actually one of the greatest pleasures that we can have in our lives. And we've never really developed very much vocabulary for describing how food makes us feel. We can talk about music and how it makes us feel all day long, or books or movies or plays, or going to the Art Institute and looking at those incredible creations that are on the wall there. And we'll talk immediately about what it makes us feel. But somehow we've become reluctant to do that about our food. So we're going to delve into a seminar where we talk about food as art. Now, a lot of people look at beautiful dishes that come to the table and they go, oh, that's just so beautiful, I can't eat it. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about when you eat it, what does it do to you? How does it make you feel? And we can all relate to one aspect of how food makes us feel, and that's nostalgic. You taste something and you go, oh, this reminds me of my grandmother, or whatever, a wonderful time, a moment in our lives. We're going to try to take it a little bit beyond that in this seminar, and we have some really thoughtful and a diverse panel. We had Todd English, who is, originally a Boston-based restaurateur and chef, who now has restaurants all over the place. He's going to be on our panel. Amanda Cohen, not a particularly well-known chef. She has a place in New York called Dirt Candy that's an all-vegetable-focused restaurant and one of the smartest, best chefs in this country. Matthias Merges from here, from You Show, and Billy Sunday and A10 down in Hyde Park. And then the coolest part of all of this is that the moderator for our panel is Adam Rappaport, who's the editor-in-chief for Bon Appetit magazine. And I would put him up there as the smartest editor that we have right now in the United States. And then the evening we're doing something that is, it's totally on trend and totally wacky. We're doing a thing called the Tao of Tacos. So you notice that Tao and tacos don't usually come together in any kind of a phrase. But we have invited a dozen chefs that all come from different culinary backgrounds to make a taco for our guests for that event that infuses their culinary vision into as a filling for a tortilla. That's going to be, without a doubt, one of the best events I think this whole weekend has to offer. So I'm really excited to be part of all of that, as well as the whole kit and caboodle, because to me, when you're talking about Chicago gourmet, and I've said this for a number of years, that there are these sponsored events all over, food and wine events that are all over the country, but none of them has the feel of Chicago Gourmet, because ours has grown up uniquely as a Chicago event, and because we have such incredible talent in this town, and we have the vision of the Illinois Restaurant Association behind us, man, they really put it all together, and I am super proud to be part of this event.
Thank you. So we've been talking about our exciting new theme this year is Food is Art. We're working with Expo Chicago, the Art Institute of Chicago, and Chicago Shakespeare Theater to bring this theme to life with art installations, storytelling, music, theater elements, and more. How do each one of you compare your work in the hospitality industry to art? Kevin, we're starting with you.
You know, one of the things that we're really big on is design. I've been lucky enough to work with some of the greatest designers in the world, and I think most people, when they think of restaurants, they think about food and they think about hospitality, but we put an equal emphasis on hospitality, and I'll tell you why. You know, we live in a society today where everybody can get everything in a second, and people's attention spans are about that short. So what we like to do within the restaurants from an artistic side is build all these layers within the restaurants. So even if it's subliminally, you keep interested every time you go inside the restaurant. So we build all this stuff, and most of the designs that we do within our restaurant are kind of based on some sort of historical narrative. So if you've ever been in Momotaro before, Momotaro, the original idea for it was the post-economic miracle in Japan and the obsessed Japanese salaryman. And you could find this within all these art installations within the restaurants. Next time you go to the bathrooms in Momotaro, look on the wall. It looks like wallpaper. It's actually four art students that scribbled 999,000 scribble marks on the wall to kind of represent the obsessed Japanese salaryman. And then pull up what the old Tokyo Stock Exchange looked like, and that's that back bar. If you go downstairs, it kind of looks like the back streets of Tokyo. And if you ever go down there, look and find a payphone down there and pick up the payphone, there's someone on the other line talking in Japanese. We put 10 recordings inside the payphone, so every time you pick the phone up, you can hear someone on the other line, some more X-rated than others. But it's in Japanese, so nobody knows. But we do this every single time. GT Prime that opens tonight, you know, it starts with a conversation sitting around a table and saying, you know, how do we want to make people feel? I loved what Rick was saying. Maya Angelou's got one of my favorite quotes is like, after you've met somebody for the first time, 10 years later, you won't remember what the exact dialogue was, but you'll remember how it made you feel. I think that's the same thing about rooms when you walk into them for the first time. GT Prime is based on this conversation we had 2 years ago about building an enchanted cabin. And so originally it was like, then the conversation went to, yeah, but everybody's doing rustic, so could it be a really fancy cabin in the Swiss Alps? And then if you walk into the room, there's all these little vignettes of animals and all these little carved foxes. So every time we go out and do a restaurant, we're looking to do something that's a serious art piece within the restaurant. Food is art. There you go.
Thanks. Rick?
I kind of spilled the beans on one part of the Chicago Gourmet that I'll be involved in, which is the panel with Adam Rappaport on food as art. But I'll just sort of share one extra little bit of that. At Topolobampo each year, we do a menu that is focused on food as art. And my challenge to our chefs is to pick out, we have a huge collection of Mexican art, mostly from the southern state of Oaxaca. And I asked the chefs to each pick out a piece that speaks to them, that makes them feel in a certain way, and then to go to the kitchen and create a dish that makes them feel that same way. And we present that. It goes for a couple of months every year. It's actually on right now in sort of anticipation of Chicago Gourmet. And we do a beautiful booklet that goes with it that explains what the chef felt in the piece of art, and you see the piece of art in the booklet, so you don't have to get up and wander around the restaurant looking for it, and then what the dish is and what the intent of the dish was in terms of feeling and what part of it really evoked that same feeling for the chefs. So we've been doing this for a number of years now because this has always been a passion for me to learn to develop a little bit more vocabulary around food and art and how they relate to one another.
Thank you. Serafin?
So for me, this theme this year is really close to my heart. Again, because of having my musical background, there's an element of sensibility that I have towards sort of the artistic, the art, the aesthetic aspect about music. And as I appreciate music, and I transfer that in terms of food and wine. And I always, when I'm teaching to my students and educating, I try to bring people to the awareness, the understanding that There is this technical aspect of, about wine, but ultimately, and what you guys mentioned very well, is how the wine makes you feel and the emotional aspect of it. So I just came back from D.C., and I was doing a presentation essentially on that, on wine and emotions. And we were able to, I primed them first. I put them, we put a couple of classical music themes and how that made you feel. We put a couple of art pieces, how that made you feel. And then we went to the wine themselves. And it was fascinating. Once people were in that zone and people were able to articulate emotional feelings in relation to a sparkling wine, champagne, let's say. They had Dom Perignon. How'd that make you feel? Versus, let's say, a Riesling with a little bit of residual sugar. Let's say with a Barolo, a little bit of tannins, was a little bit of tension, and so on and so forth. And it was fascinating that the discussion and how people unfolded in that regard. And I think that that's ultimately that's what it's all about. I think we can geek out all about what we want about wine, talk in a very technical way. But at the end of the day, how we connect and how we relate everyone is through the emotional aspect of it, the experience that is created as a result. And I thought, from my perspective, I always try to see wine in that perspective in terms of being inspiring, thought-provoking. And that's the way I think that ultimately we all relate and we all connect to wine. Yeah.
Thank you, Serafin. Chicago Gourmet spotlights a world-class culinary community. What do you guys think makes Chicago dining scene unique? What do we do better than other cities? Rick?
Gosh, I could get into real trouble with this.
that's why I started out with you.
I'll back you up.
Thank you so much. Tee it up right there for me to knock off. Okay. Well, one thing about Chicago dining that is unique is I think the fact that we are in the Midwest. So there's a certain kind of character that people in the Midwest have, and it's very approachable character. And a lot of the restaurants in Chicago are just plain nice restaurants to dine at. People are really friendly. There's not a lot of, when you walk into Chicago restaurants from top to bottom, you're greeted in a way that I think reflects Midwestern sense of hospitality. So people, to go back to the Maya Angelou quote, they remember how we make them feel when they come to Chicago. Then the next level down is the experience that you have in those restaurants is a unique experience. It's not necessarily just a trendy experience, because I feel like that Chicago restaurants reflect the people that live here, so we have a lot of diversity in the restaurants. The Chicago chefs are not just following each other, but are trying to offer their own unique visions, which sometimes doesn't happen. You go to other really well-known food cities, and you can see the trends in every restaurant that you eat in. Chicago's a little less about the trends and more about the visions of the chefs, which really makes me excited, because I can go out every weekend when I'm off and be able to have a very interesting and unique dining experience. And I think that you can't always do that in other cities. I would say those two things to me really characterize what makes Chicago a really great restaurant city. That plus the fact that, you know what, at the end of the day, it's about a lot of talent. And Chicago has attracted a massive amount of talent and grown it up from the ranks that are here. And I'm so happy to see that. We did a sort of family tree of our restaurant not too long ago of all the restaurants that have opened or are being run by people that have come out of our restaurants. And it was pretty remarkable when we sort of actually put it on paper to see that, that there's just so much talent that has grown up in this town or been attracted to this town that it keeps us really at the very top.
Serafin?
I agree with Rick. I think that's that Midwestern mindset, I think, is really reflected in terms of our restaurants. There's this lack of pretension that you may find in perhaps in New York, and here it's an element of genuine sincerity, and people really, really care, and they treat you like a family member, and that's part of that sense of hospitality and sense of how we think about service and how we take care of people is very personal. And there's an element of pride that really goes into that personal touch, personal approach. And it's very intimate. And then you add that, the talent in itself, and then that you can take that to where we are today, which is a fascinating, fascinating level. So along with the cultural and ethnic diversity that we have and that Midwestern mentality and the talent that we have, puts us really on the top tier in terms of culinary destinations in the world. Absolutely.
Thank you. Here's an amazing concept. Chicago chefs actually cook in their kitchens. And
that's true.
Yeah, good point. And Chicagoans do not reward restaurants where the chefs don't. You can't just come into this town and be a New York chef and have 37 restaurants in the United States and plop a restaurant here and hope that it succeeds. It almost always doesn't. And I love that about you guys, and I love that about this city. If I want to go to a restaurant, I can go see Rick in his kitchen. I've seen Rick at the frickin' airport cooking at the airport. Grant Achatz is in his kitchen. Stephanie Eisert's in her kitchen. I love that about this town. And the other half of that is emotional service. You know, before I moved here, I remember going to New York years ago and going into a restaurant, and I walked 1 foot in the door, and they were like, "Mr. Baim, how are you? Nice to see you. And come right this way." And there was a letter, a card in the middle of the table from the owner. And then at the end of the meal, I'd asked the maitre d', I said, "I got to ask you a question." I said, "How did you know how to pronounce my last name? Everybody always hacks it. In fact, they wrote my last name wrong on my name tag tonight." Whatever. I'm used to it. It's right here. And then I said, "So how did you know how to pronounce my name?" And she said, "You know, we were stumped in your last name, so we called one of your restaurants and asked them how to pronounce your last name." And I was like, "God damn, that's good." And I remember going back and saying, it turned out that operator in New York City, Danny Meyer, just happens to be unique to New York. That kind of stuff exists everywhere in Chicago. People are emotional about service in this town. And that's always who I wanted to be as a company, the kind of people that were little CIA agents in a good way, that before everybody walked in the door, you knew enough information about people to know maybe table 37's from St. Paul, Minnesota, so I'm going to sit him with our server who was born in St. Paul, Minnesota, because maybe they have some commonality, maybe they could talk about something. That's what Chicagoans do well. It's that same Midwest thing. We're emotional people, and we do that so much better than anybody else does. I don't even think it's close, man. I really don't. There's a reason why we're on the best service list so many times at the Jay's Beard Awards, because we're better. You can quote me on that.
I agree.
That's what I say. We're the culinary capital of the United States, right, Kev? You think we're going to get that World Series this year, Kevin? I got to ask Kevin this question. Kevin's a huge Cub fan. What do you think? We're going to get there or what?
As a lifelong Cubs fan, you can't say stuff like that, Sam. You just got to let it come as it comes.
There's a few Cardinal fans out here, so I had to throw that out there.
They were allowed
in?
They were allowed in? I'm optimistic, but as any Cub fan knows, you have to be cautiously optimistic.
You answered it very well. Anyway, what's your perspective on how the restaurant industry has changed over the span of each of your career? Serafin.
From a wine perspective, I have to say that a lot has changed. I got here in 2001, and to where we are today in terms of beverage programs is fascinating. It's at par with best beverage programs in the United States. The talent that we have here that we have developed in the last 15 years is fascinating. For example, elements such as glassware, there's been a huge evolution where, and back in the day, they have these very thick glasses. Now you have these Riedel glassware and very fine glassware. Storage facilities, the mentality in terms that wine should be served and stored at a certain temperature, that has changed dramatically. The attitude and the mindset and what is provided, the diversity. The wine lists today are much more, there's an element of identity with the restaurant. It's just not a laundry list. It's not just something that is just put together. Okay, let's put together a Chardonnay. No. There's a thought process into putting a wine list that reflects the identity of the restaurant, represents the identity of the person who's putting together, represents the menu in itself. There's a personality and distinction that comes around from it. And I think we have evolved tremendously in that sense. Mixologists, for example, what's happening from the mixology perspective, where there's this element of care and attention that goes into putting together these cocktails that are also reflective in terms of the operation. I think all that has gone a long, long way in the last 15 years. That back in the day when I started at Charlie Trotter, Charlie was ahead of the time. And in that regard, and today it's a common thing. Wherever you go, wines by the glass, for example, the offerings. Back in the day when I got here, ordering a wine by the glass almost was a risk, was a minefield. You know what you're going to get. Today, any place that you go, you have a very serious, thoughtful wine by the glass program put together. What Rick does is fascinating. I know Jill Gubisch, Rick's the beverage director, and she's done a fascinating job in terms of putting the wine list that, again, is very reflective in terms of what you do. And I don't know if you haven't had the opportunity to visit what Jill has done there is fascinating, along with the cocktails program and along with the wine program. And that's what it's all about. And I think we're starting to see that more across the board. Yeah. And in your restaurants, fascinating as well, the element of just creating that level of identity where it's not just a copycat, all-size-fits-all approach. Yeah.
Kevin? When we opened Boca in 2003, there was exactly one line written around the restaurant opening. It was, we had a cell phone booth in there, and I think Chicago Magazine had Dish, and they wrote like one little tiny line. Didn't even get reviewed for a year and a half. The proliferation of celebrity chefs and food and just the bar getting raised on the quality of food that people put out is just exploded. I mean, you open up a restaurant now, there's 682 blogs that write about your restaurant opening. I'm going through that right now. So I think that's a really good thing. But also, I remember when people used to say, oh, yeah, I'm opening up a restaurant and we're going to be seasonal and we're going to be regional and all that sort of stuff. And that being a news story, and that's not a news story anymore. Everybody is cooking responsibly these days, or most people are in a city like this. I think that for the consumers, it's been a huge, massive win. You know, in 2008 and 2009, when the world collapsed, all of a sudden everybody figured out, hey, us fancy chefs don't just have to open up fancy restaurants. We can cook all levels of food. We can, you know, the whole quick service world's changing right now. Go home and Google the top 50 quick service restaurants in America. I bet you in 10 years that list is completely different. McDonald's might be number one still just based on sheer size, but I think all the rest of them are going to change. So I think the world's becoming a better place for consumers to eat food.
Thank you. Rick?
To pick up on what Kevin said, when we opened Frontera, I had just moved back from Mexico, and what I had learned in Mexico was that the best cuisine was always at the place with the best local agriculture. And I came to Chicago, and we didn't have a single farmer's market, and we couldn't find a single farm that we could work with. Nobody would even come into the city to deliver anything to us. And so I thought, we've got a long ways to go with this. Today, you can't even put farm to table on your menu because it's so commonplace. It's like what everybody expects. If you aren't doing farm to table as a chef in Chicago, you're probably not a very good chef. So that has been a major win. But I will say that what I see the most is that our diners are incredibly educated, and they keep us moving forward all the time. And the amount of knowledge and interest and enthusiasm that our diners bring to us just keeps propelling us to do better work all the time.
Thank you. And now Paul told me I got to cut it off. I got a lot more questions, but he wants me to cut it off. So let's hear it for our panel. I also want to give a shout out to our chairman, Dan Costello, for giving me the long leash to make sure we keep growing Chicago Gourmet for a moment. Stand up, Dan. Wave over there. Dan, all right. Thank you. All right, Paul, back to you. I don't like giving up the mic. I don't know if you figured that out yet. Skinny was the one that taught me how to speak at the mic, right, Skin? Right back in the day.
You not, may not know this, but Sam formerly was Lynn Burton. That's only for really old Chicagoans who really understand that. Figure, Mike Hayes, thank you. We had questions here, Sam, that you never got to because you never had them. And They're all kind of personal questions, but before I give out the big awards and the special Let Us Entertain You gift certificate, there is one question that really should be answered. 25 words or less. I know for you guys that's tough. Here we go. From John Weber. How are you able to cook the same dish for so many times and still have it taste the same and enjoy cooking it for them again and again? Rick, you're
I guess that's for me, right?
You got it, Rick. That's called okay. That's really a hardball. Go ahead.
I love what I do so much that every time I come to a dish, even if it's a dish I have made 1,000 times, I come to it with fresh eyes and renewed passion. That's just who I am. And I think there are a lot of chefs that don't come to the kitchen like that and it becomes rote for them. But over a period of time, it loses its freshness and vitality. I am constantly asking our chefs, can't we make this better? And they'll say, no, it's like a classic dish here. No, can't we make it better? I'm sure there's something that we could bring to it new. Can't we look at this through new eyes? So we are constantly reevaluating everything on our menu. We change our menus all the time. And even if we do a dish that we did this same time last year, we're going to see it through the 2016 eyes and with freshness and a deeper understanding and knowledge of the cuisine. The one thing about food, same thing happens in wine, is that you can never learn it all. It's always going to offer you something that you just never had uncovered.
That's a hell of an answer. Round of applause, everybody.
Words.
And
you're fine dining.
Sam will give you one, too.
Oh, thank you.
As we're fine dining, that'll give you a chance to pour the wine into a very fancy cup, the City Club mug, and, of course, a one-year membership in the City Club. For all of you. And Kevin, your family is in Springfield politics?
No.
Different. Okay, just had to ask. Here we go. 1 year membership in the City Club of Chicago.
Thank you.
Big round of applause. And before we go, I could make a bad joke. You could have a free meal at any one of the restaurants, but I won't do that because we have a great prize for you, and it goes to a guy whose name is absolutely perfect, easy to pronounce. It has 2 Z's and 2 Y's. John Suzuki, Vice President, Wintrust. Where are you, John? You win. See this young lady. Adjourned.